If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
I'm a coffee fiend.
Ah, another addict.
I had to choose between a bear and this mug that says, "Hello, gorgeous."
Of course. I went with a little bear that
says Gurr. Yeah, there's cute. A Space Jam mug and a Monsters U.
Oh, yeah.
Not a fishing mug, but looks like something that came from Target.
And Andrew, you on this day of whimsy and fantasy have chosen to be a laborer.
Out of paper, out of stock, there's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and behind neighbor, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, chair model.
And with us as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
This is really good. This is really good. My heart soars with the eagle's nest.
Well, every week we get together and discuss our favorite show, NBC's The Office. Today we're still out here on this Ryan's Cool Retreat, MSPC, Wilderness Adventure Retreat out here in Mount Hood. And today we're going to be talking about Season 4, which we have just spent the weekend watching together, pretty much.
The last leg of our podcast journey. I'm glad that we were able to watch this season together, and I'm excited to dive into it because I think this is a personal favorite for all of us.
It's my favorite season. Yeah.
It's definitely one of the best, for sure. We also got to watch it on DVD, and we watched a lot of deleted scenes along the way.
I love that you say it as if it's a privilege that we got to watch it on DVD.
What a treat.
There's just stuff you can only see on those DVDs.
I got to watch all of that Ninja Turtles cartoon on VHS back in the day.
The fourth season of The Office aired on September 27, 2007 and concluded on May 15, 2008. NBC ordered a full season of 30 episodes, but after 12 were filmed, the Writers Guild went on strike, which went from November 5, 2007 to sometime in 2008. The Office immediately halted filming on that date because Steve Carell, WGA member, refused to cross the picket lines.
Yeah, I actually want to, I'm glad you mentioned this because this is something that I wanted to kind of set up as context for the season. I mean, this season is super unique within the rest of, alongside the other eight. So, of the nine total, this one is the shortest outside of season one, which is, the early six episodes.
Only six.
As the show began to get full season runs, this one only came to, only aired 14 episodes, right? And to your point, like 30 episodes were ordered, right?
Yeah.
And in reading a little bit of background about this, because of the writer's strike and everything, they had to clip these episodes together. And I think when you watch, and knowing that as we were watching the season together, like you could really see it. Like you can really see episodes that, could easily be two episodes that are really like kind of edited together into one.
Mm.
It makes for a really interesting viewing experience to watch that and kind of look for the seams and see where the storylines kind of fold over on themselves a little bit. I'm thinking specifically of Dunder Mifflin Infinity, which is the episode where, on one hand, Michael is resistant to the new website and this change and this embrace of new technology, right? Mm-hmm. And it brings up this idea of ageism. That could be its own episode. This idea where Michael is going to try to win back clients with gift baskets and is still continuing to be resistant to technology and drives his car into a lake, that could be its own episode, right? But together, it's 40 minutes of office content.
Just him hitting Meredith and the fallout.
Right.
But then it's like, and we're going to do this run.
Right, and the run for charity. And, I mean, that one, like, I mean, some of them do feel good as a totally. Complete 40-minute episode, or even like a part one or a part two, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember reading as I was looking into this that they were there's no Christmas episode in this season, mm-hmm. which I think is the only one without a Christmas episode besides season one. I could mm-hmm. be wrong, but...
there's no holidays at all in this.
Yeah. Like,
there's not a Halloween one. No.
Right.
I guess that's usually the only
launch
two they
party
do,
but... seems to be the only party.
Yeah. And in reading about this... the idea for the Christmas episode was going to be around Belschnickel, which of course was brought back in season 9. Mm. Not to spend too much time up top setting everything up, but I do think if you watch this season in context, it kind of, like, maybe you have a different perspective on it when you watch it, knowing everything that was going on at the time.
It's a super ambitious season. Like, if you think about some of the things that developed in the show, given where the show was in season 3 and the mm-hmm. choices they make in season 4 and beyond, yeah, there's a lot that happens in season 4, even though it's short.
Yeah, we got, I mean, just in terms of main storylines, you know, I mean, I think we kind of start with Ryan versus Michael a lot, especially in Dunder Mifflin Infinity. Michael versus Jan as the season goes on later is a big plot point. Dwight versus Angela Andy's relationship.
Dwight versus the computer.
Dwight versus the computer. and Michael versus technology as well is another main topic. I think it'd be fun to talk about how technology plays a role in this season as well.
True.
Any favorite episodes for you guys, just as a starting point?
I think as a starting point, I want to mention that at the beginning of Fun Run, where, of course, Michael hits Meredith with his car.
Yeah.
That's a kind of the inciting incident for this season.
Starting with a bang.
He's driving in the PT, he's in the PT Cruiser, right?
I think so.
And he's like, my protege Ryan is a corporate, Jim is back, I'm happy with Jan. Like, he's like, everything is great. And then he hits Meredith. He's set up kind of these dynamics, like, Jim is back. And we learn in the first episode that he's dating Pam. Ryan is in corporate, of course. Michael and Jan are together. That sets up kind of these big, maybe bigger differences from season 3.
Yeah.
Like, and you're like, all right, I know exactly what's going on in this season.
Yeah, that's a big one, of course. Jim and Pam now together in season 4, getting together just at the very end of season 3 and pretending it's a secret for this first Fun Run episode. Things are really good with Jim and Pam throughout this entire season, I would say. There's very little conflict between them.
Yeah, they're just
betwinkst them.
I think that's a really important development for the show because the first 3 seasons are characterized so much by Jim and Pam. You know, will they, won't they? Will they be together? Can they get together? Even when they're both single, they're not together, at least not, you know, for at least for a brief moment, you know, and it seems like the timing never works out. And even though they both clearly are so connected and they have such an affinity for each other, like, they can never make it work. And in season 4, we do see that they are dating and that they're trying to keep it secret, which is kind of a fun thing. And then I think that's true of seasons 4, 5, 6, 7 a little bit, in that Jim and Pam's relationship dynamic is a little bit more in the background. It's it obviously, of course, things still happen. They become pregnant, they get engaged, they get married, like, all these things do happen, but there is less tension. There's less emotional drama, you know, it feels less uncertain.
Even
at the end of the season, when Jim does not propose to Pam, we still get this, you know, this feeling they're together. At least they're together.
Yeah. I mean, there's all these great moments between them in this season 2. I'm thinking of, I love when Jim tells Pam that Dwight and Angela have been dating for 6 months, and Pam is so shocked and gets to tell him, no, actually, they've been dating for 2 years.
I love
ever since your barbecue.
The fake surprise on Pam's face. She's like, oh,
that's cool.
No. They've actually been dating
for
2 years.
I see your bet and I raise you all in. Yeah.
And then there's this moment where they're both just like so happy, and Jim says, why haven't we been dating since a long time ago?
Mm-hmm.
I love watching them just being happy together. And also still kind of working their same positions at in the office. You know, it's not like Jim has a lot of added pressure yet, being co-manager or them having a family. They just get to share these little jokes and kind of make fun of everyone. And it's just fun. It's nice.
Yeah, this is pre-art school Pam. This is pre-the engagement. This is pre-Pam as a salesman.
Yeah.
I keep saying pre-Pam. Pre-Pam as the office administrator, you know, like all of these things that become on later, especially for Pam and Jim, you know, this is this unique sort of little sweet spot where they're together, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but I think Dwight and Angela emerge as sort of the mirror image, the yeah. sort of reflection to Jim and Pam, where they have relationship drama and Dwight is trying to win Angela back. Whereas Jim and Pam are always struggling to get together for the very first time, Dwight and Angela were together, and then there's this fissure that happens when Dwight kills her cat, and then Dwight has to sort of win her back, right? Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know how for the longest time.
Yeah.
And of course, Andy and Bernard enters the picture, but the Dwight-Angela relationship dynamic emerges as something that needs to be resolved, and of course will last for, you know, the next five seasons.
Yeah, all this gets set up in Fun Run. I mean, as we're kind of learning that Jim and Pam are actually dating, we're watching things fall apart between Dwight and Angela.
Mm-hmm. And Andy just became the most handsome single guy in the universe.
That's right.
As soon as he finds out they're off the market.
That's true.
This is also the first we see of, like, emotionally distressed Dwight, you know?
Yes.
We see Dwight, you know, early on as confident, but still subservient to Michael. And when Dwight is kind of humiliated by Michael, it's sad, but in, like, a funny...
He absorbs
in
it.
In a funny almost, way, though. You know?
Yeah. Right.
Absorb the blow, as Dwight would say, you know? Fortunately, my feelings regenerate at twice the rate of a normal man. But we do get to see Dwight, on one hand, like, emotionally distressed, but also still trying to preserve a relationship with Michael and other characters. I think he says, he's like, yeah, like Angela in accounting. And Michael's like, yeah, I guess. And he goes, no, but she's wonderful at accounting. The way, like, he still has to flip it around at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we can't really talk about what he's feeling. Like, I think that's a great moment.
In the episode Money, we see Dwight weeping in his room.
Yeah, it sounds like Chewbacca crying.
Looking at this little figurine that Angela left behind.
Moaning into the darkness and the howling wind.
Yeah.
Century is this? Yeah.
At the start of that episode, we catch Dwight giving Angela a bunch of stuff.
Her things back.
Yeah, and she's looking for a little figurine that he says has gone missing. But he's kept it so that he can weep over it at night. And also, I think we learned that, like, Mose knows about Angela in that episode, too, which is just kind of a funny relationship to think about as we see that.
The deleted scenes from Money are really funny.
Yeah, that's right. It must have been a deleted scene.
I think this moment happens in Money, but which is, what, episode 7 and 8. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the moment where we see Dwight going to the stairwell and kind of, like, really, mm-hmm. really upset, almost to the point of tears, you know, sitting in that little landing, and Jim comes down and tells him, you know, when Pam was engaged to Roy, I couldn't handle it. I had to move. Food didn't taste as good. Like, nothing in my life seemed right. And I had to move away. And, you know, that's something that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. Right.
Yeah.
And then he gets up and leaves, and Dwight reaches out for him, and Jim is not there, which is funny and sad at the same time. Yeah, like,
you catch his surprise.
Yeah. And
that's for Rainn Wilson. That's an impressive scene to shoot, because that's all one take. Mm. And like Jim is giving a really heartfelt speech. He has to, like, have his head in the corner.
Yeah.
Like, crying and then do that little physical comedy bit, like, right after.
It's so perfect.
And in the Office fashion, it's, like, it's really funny, but also, like, sad,
it's
and
very
also,
touching.
Oh yeah,
you know, nice and mm-hmm. like, sweet. Like, it's a good moment. And then Dwight comes back and he's kind of himself again, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. And we see Jim and Dwight go from rivals to still rivals to best friends through the course of the show. And this is, I think, a moment in that journey.
But, yeah, totally. And I've talked about Money being my favorite episode in The Office. And we touched on this in our peak Office episode of, like, what are the peak runs? And I do think those first four episodes of season four is some of the best. Fun Run through Money. I mean, the entire...
Those four are
amazing. We could talk about Dunder Mifflin Infinity episodes. And Ryan in a second, because Ryan is a theme throughout this whole. Yeah. I mean, this entire season is Ryan's one season in corporate, where Ryan has power, and we see the rise and fall of Ryan. But I actually what I want to talk about was Local Ad, which was upon watching all this back with you guys. That episode really jumped out to me as one that's A, grown on me a lot, and B, I think has so much heart in it. In a season full of, I think, really heartfelt episodes. But that one, too, when getting to see Michael's full creative angst on display.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed, as time goes on, of, like, how much he puts into that and to see what Michael really cares about. It's just this nice sort of break He has a pretty bad run there at the end of Money. I mean, and then dinner parties coming around the corner. You know, there's so much
deposition.
I
wrote down something similar, that there's this sweet spot during this season where you get these shows that could stand alone in any season almost. Mm-hmm. Local Ad, Branch Wars, Survivor Man, Chair Model, and Job Fair much later on in the season, all kind of don't really have to do with these main overarching story mm-hmm. plots. Like
probably Did I Stutter too.
Like Jim and Pam. Yeah, Did I Stutter, actually, you're right. We're not talking about Michael and Jan. We're not talking about Ryan even very much in those episodes. They could almost be, you almost forget where they land in the series of episodes. Yeah.
I would argue that's part of the reason why we like this season so much and why we consider it to be a very strong season, because those episodes are sort of like, they're not temporal. They're not, locked into a specific time or a specific mm-hmm. plot dynamic. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the reason I like season two so much, because it's just like, it's a slice of life. It's just a day in the office, you know, mm-hmm. and you get a lot of that with some of these
episodes. What's Michael
as well.
Doing today?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Something, it's this day in the office and Michael learns a lesson, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how so many of these episodes kind of go. But I do think that having the, like, if an episode doesn't have to have the burden of, like, you know, Jim and Pam or Michael and Holly or Dwight and Angela or you know, Kevin, mm-hmm. Kevin and Lynn or whatever it is, you know, it does give it a little bit, it lightens it up a little bit. It's not as heavy.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a kind of a theme throughout season four, is putting people in positions of power that they're not used to. You see that happening a lot for the first time in this season.
Survivor Man, Jim.
Yeah, like Jim has to figure out the office parties. I mean, Ryan, the whole time is in charge of this affinity initiative, and that trickles down to all these other characters having to do stuff, mainly Michael having to, like, do the PowerPoint presentation. So Michael takes out, Jan is having to struggle with just sort of, like, not...
The lack of power.
A lack of power, running Serenity by Jan, what that does to
Stanley
Michael.
Stanley asserts himself, and Did I Stutter?
Stanley asserts himself. Even like... Even A Night Out, which we watched last night, which is such a ridiculous episode putting Michael and dropping them in New York with this coked up Ryan. It's like such a departure, considering that, you know, only a season ago that Ryan was just a temp in the office. And then it's just happened so quickly. I don't know. It's just a very, very funny kind of new settings for these people to be in. Mm-hmm. Daryl has developed a lot more in this season.
Yeah, definitely.
About Daryl and Kelly.
Yeah.
Forming their relationship, which I love to see. I don't, off the top of my head, I'm not sure which mm-hmm. episode it is, but of course, Daryl and Jim get into a ping pong rivalry, which really becomes more of a rivalry between Kelly and Pam, mm-hmm. which is probably the only...
I think it's during the deposition.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's
Michael
right.
and Michael's Toby gone. Are gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Deposition's a weird one, too.
I love the deposition.
It's great. It's great. But it's like, they have a lot to accomplish in that episode. Like, they have to set up the whole, like the whole legal system, what's going on. And then, it's a weird B storyline, too. Yeah. It's like, just playing ping pong.
I love the idea that Michael is being watched and recorded and held accountable for everything he says. That, like, the stenographer has to read back the notes, or the person taking notes, I think, I don't know if it's a stenographer in a deposition, has to read back what Michael has said. And it's like, can I go to the bathroom? No, you went 5 minutes ago. That wasn't to go to the bathroom. That was to get out of a question. Can I go to the bathroom now? No. Like, it's something, it's, you know, like, all those things.
Doing taking the That's What She Said joke and putting it in a court, like, putting it, you know, in a legal sense of, like, wait, what did he say? Who did Jan say?
And
that
you
to?
Were under her the whole time. That's what she said.
She butchered the
Mr.
delivery.
Mr. Scott, that's what she said.
Can we go back to where this digression began?
That's great.
Aren't we trying to get to the bottom of whether Michael and Jan had a relationship? Not Michael and this Ryan. And I love that Toby is there to laugh at it.
Loving
all.
It.
Like, it's great. It's so good.
And the moment when Michael walks into the cafeteria and everyone's, like, furiously reading his diary with highlighters and, like, What a existential moment for Michael to, like, Toby's like, could I get a copy of that? And there's a shot of Ryan reading it, and Ryan makes this face just going, Like, I said this before, but I wish they'd release.
He's reading things about himself. Probably.
Yeah, I wish they'd release that diary.
What I thought about when we got to the deposition was that up until this point, Michael and Jan's relationship is not that bad. She supports him during the fun run. She backs him up during Dunder Mifflin Infinity when she tells him about ageism and how, you know, Ryan's just trying to push out old people.
They sit on the train and money.
Even during money, yeah, where you think that Pam is spending all of Michael's money and torturing him. Jan is spending all of Michael's money and torturing him. But actually, it's Michael just screwing up himself again. And Jan is going to have his back and sits next to him on that train. Even for most of the deposition episode, there's like that part too where they're in the convertible and they're running through all the lines because Jan's wanted him to memorize everything.
They displayed a pattern of disrespect and inappropriate behavior.
My friend Pat took a turn.
Yeah.
My friend Disray got new specs.
And a Prius with my behind neighbor.
Does that work? Yeah, yeah.
He's like getting sick in the car and he's like, can we put down the top? And she's like, no, it's gonna mess up my hair. And she's like, okay, fine. And then they're just like,
cut to,
yeah, they're sitting in the lobby and she's just calmly like combing out her hair. Like, she makes sacrifices for Michael too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think in those moments we like,
although comparatively,
kind of appreciate their relationship a little bit. Mm-hmm. But at the end of this episode, of course, we learn that she was trying to get him fired for a while when they were still together.
Speaking of that sort of tension that like that you mentioned, I mean, of course, we do see that Jan is starting to spend him out of his money in the money episode, but agreed that they seem to be not entirely dysfunctional, you know? Mm-hmm. Like you see shades of it, but at least they seem happy, you know, and they're kind of figuring it out, of course.
They're trying. They're really trying.
I'm a little surprised. I was just thinking about this now that Jan doesn't try to coach Michael a little more. Now that she's not his boss, but she still was a person in Corbett on like how to kind of act. I think it would have been a funny scene for Jan to try to coach Michael and Michael to not understand what she's saying.
Yeah.
I think that would be a funny scene. But the other thing I wanted to call out in the deposition is when they first bring out the diary, like you were talking about the diary and, you know, Michael says, I can't believe you found my diary. And she says, you keep it on my side of the mattress. And Michael says, I don't like the lump, whatever.
Yeah.
And then they say a couple other things and then it's like, I love you. I love you too. Like they split up that way. You know?
Yeah. They decide that they're even because he sent the naked photo out to everybody.
Another
that when Michael discovered there's
the company.
I feel like when Michael discovered there was a stenographer, he would test it out and be like, "Really? She's gonna write down every single thing I say? Mm-hmm. Like even if I say this?" Or like, as you can see a scene where he's
I'm gonna
just
type
like,
every word I know.
Yeah, him and the stenographer are just looking
Butthole.
At each other.
In the
that's a Ron Swanson.
In the deleted scene, we see this thing where Michael tries to give like opening remarks, and he's like, "It's a pleasure to be here. At my age, it's a pleasure to be anywhere." He's like, but I'm not old. I am young. Like he's right. He's catching himself. Like.
Watching the deleted scenes for the deposition, Michael's way more inappropriate and says a lot more that the things that he should not.
He feels trapped and he goes into a Borat voice.
Yeah, he tells everybody at the start that he would like to, like he makes this speech like where he'd like to bring in a bit of humor and stuff like to lighten the mood. It's really bizarre. Of course, after this dinner party, the whole thing crashes and burns.
And that break after the deposition is when the writer's strike break happens, and then they pick up again.
Yeah.
So that was in November that deposition aired, and then in April picks up with the dinner party.
Long time. 5 months between those.
5 months, and boy, oh boy, are they having a great time during dinner party.
Yeah, it does seem like the writers were ready to go because they come out with this hard-boiled cringe comedy episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is set up through the season. I mean, there are moments where Jim and Pam, or during Money, when they know that Michael has to leave and has a commitment, Jim and Pam are like, now. And they're like, Michael, we want to have dinner with you. And he's like, oh, I can't tonight. I've got a thing tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, damn it to hell. Like, you know, he's so upset. And, you know, there are other moments where he's like, hey, you and Pam should come over and have dinner with me and Jan. And Jim's like, oh, yeah, we should definitely do that sometime. Mm-hmm. Like, but this weekend? He's like, I can't this weekend. Or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, they bring it up so much. So they actually set up this fact that when Michael corners them, and engineers this scenario where they have no plans because he's made it clear they have to work late, and then he cancels it and invites them over. You said you had no plans.
You said he's right there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we should. We're probably going to do a dinner party episode at some point.
Yeah,
I would hope so.
Got to.
So we probably don't want to get too far into that one, but
I mean, we get to see Michael and Jan's relationship kind of unravel. We get to see Pam. Everyone there is trapped. I love the idea that they're there. They can't leave because the food hasn't been served.
Except Dwight. He's very much there on his free will.
He's brought his beet salad.
Eating that big turkey leg.
Popping one of your beets into my mouth
makes me want to vomit. But yeah, it's awkward and it's terrible. Like, it's just, it's I love it. It's one of my favorite episodes. Yeah. I think objectively it might be the best episode in the series.
It probably is.
But yeah, it does set up then Michael and Jan's first sort of schism, where Michael agrees to take the fall by not pressing charges, and he goes to stay with Dwight. But then, of course, I think something that you brought up, you were talking about Michael versus technology and Michael versus, you know, Michael versus Ryan and Michael versus Jan at some point. I think you can almost look at this entire season as Michael verse. I think watching the season, I think this season is so much more about Michael's like personality and psyche and his mentality than more of the other seasons. Like, Michael really gets more, it's more of a sandbox for him to play in. Like, you look at, you know, Fun Run, it's like Michael versus everyone in the office hating him, and Michael versus technology, and Michael versus, you know, Jan spending him broke, and Michael versus
Stanley.
Michael versus Karen.
Michael versus the commercial producers.
The lack of creativity.
And David Wallace.
Michael versus Toby eternally.
During the deposition, when he's trying to figure out whether he's more loyal to Jan or the company in that moment, you know.
I wanted to talk about that moment too.
Yeah.
When he like talks with David Wallace. And he like doubles down as this company man.
Yeah. Expect your company to screw you. you don't expect your girlfriend to. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, David, the relationship between David and Michael, you just wonder, you get to some of those thoughts of David, like, look, he's a good guy. What do you want me to say?
Yeah. Look, yeah, he's a good guy. What do you want me to say? And then Michael
somehow that's enough
says,
for Michael to be like,
I think
like,
you're a good guy too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, I think, God. But, and then I think too that it gets flipped. That gets flipped in season 5 for the Michael Scott Paper Company arc. When Holly is there and David sends Holly away, like that's kind of the last straw for Michael, where he has been this loyal company man all this time. 15 years, right?
Yeah.
15 years. And like that's sort of the flip. So we see it on one side here where Michael stays loyal to Dunder Mifflin. But I do think it's a little bit of character growth when in the next season he does not stay loyal to Dunder Mifflin. But I mean, just to continue this Michael verse thing, you know, Michael versus loneliness in the chair model in the night out, you know, Michael versus Stanley, like you said, you know, and then like, I guess, goodbye Toby, Michael versus Toby. That's the end point. Like, so many of these episodes are Michael raging against the machine, you know, like it's
even job fair is like Michael against the perception that what he does is boring.
The paper industry is lame.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good
just
one.
Trying to convince
Branch
people.
Wars is Michael against Karen and Utica to save Stanley.
Survivor Man, Michael against nature.
That's all the elements.
Dwight's role throughout this whole season as well, I think, is really interesting. I mean, I bring up Survivor Man. And Dwight as this sort of sentry watching Michael, making sure he's not going to kill himself. Like, he has the sense.
I will even let Farm befall him. But yeah. I will befall him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will even let him die. He does not.
Right. I mean, the way he goes with along with Branch Wars, I mean, he's immediately in for anything. That's always been Dwight's thing.
And in Survivor Man, we see the delusional confidence of Michael, just like where he cuts off the pant legs and he's like, this is a great piece of material. And he's just tearing his pants in half. And sorry to take the focus away from Dwight, but like, I just wanted to call out, like, he wears what pant leg as a hat. He wears his suit coat as a sweater.
He tented it. He tented his pants.
Oh, yeah. Very nice pants. A very nice pants tent.
That's right. Shout out to there, David. He comes back. He's wearing a Battlestar Galactica sweatshirt,
crew neck,
a huge one. Yeah, it's great. I think we should talk for a second about Dunder Mifflin Infinity, because it's a weird, funny little wrinkle. Because obviously, Saber's coming in a couple seasons. And this is sort of the first time they're sort of, besides when Stanford comes in, and you get a few episodes about the sort of logistical. I don't know, underbelly of what happens with the instance companies when a branch closes and how that all moves around. But this is one of the first times where they confront the limitations of Dunder Mifflin a little bit, of saying, do we need to bring this into the paper or into the digital age, right? And Ryan is the perfect person to kind of think he can do this, and for some reason make Dunder Mifflin a social experience or some, you know, whatever stupid thing. I mean, this is right in the height of of Facebook, social media, right? Like this came out in like 2007, 2008.
I think it's still kind of a joke that they are behind. You know, we do see like Jim. It says, I don't understand what's wrong with the website that we already have, which is a stick figure wearing a Santa hat, holding a shovel.
Yeah.
It's a gif of him digging in the ground.
Coming Christmas 2002. and this is airing in 2007. So, you know, I think that they are behind, but I do think that it was still at a time when it was kind of believable that a company like this might be making this switch.
Well, no one knew what they were doing, really, at that time. It's like, do we need a website that does? Yeah, let's get on this.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, what they're really fighting against is all these people buying paper directly from, you know, Staples, Office Depot, or whatever. But putting, it's basically this chance to get Ryan at this position in corporate, getting way too big for his britches, and then his eventual fall. I mean, how do you guys feel about, I mean, every time Ryan comes into the, he always is like, my favorite branch.
How's my favorite branch doing?
All this gusto and bravado.
Yeah.
And everyone remarks about him. He can never shake his status as an intern. As a temp. He just can't. He just never can. But he's like, it's my favorite branch, when it's clearly he hates going there more than anything else because he has no power there.
It's funny you say that, because it is like, up until this point, right, Ryan's been kind of like a straight character, maybe besides his antics with Kelly and stuff like that. But he has been kind of a normal guy up until this point.
He just makes dry cutting remarks.
Yeah, and you could see him being like actually being able to do this position, and he seems to be doing it sort of well. I mean, he's he's kind of putting down the hammer on Michael, which someone probably should do.
Yeah, Stanley gives him that little look.
Yeah.
When Ryan's like, this is inappropriate, and it stops now. Like,
yeah.
The first time he comes back, and Stanley's like, very
nice. Like, finally.
All right. I like it.
But I think that what we learn is that he's actually not handling it very well, and that,
he's good at projecting. That's about it.
Yeah. He knows how he's supposed to appear, right? He's got the black, all black suit, and the beard, and kind of knows how he's supposed to talk and stuff like that. But of course, we learn that he's got a cocaine addiction or habit, probably. And
his office is smaller than he makes it look,
and is very lonely up in New York, it seems.
And when you see his
but he ran into Vince Vaughn that one time.
It's true. And then you see his studio,
and
night out of like where he lives, and it's sort of like his world gets smaller and smaller as the season goes on. But it does, like, when he's so genuinely excited to see Michael and Dwight. I mean, granted, of course, he's been doing coke all night, but when he sees Michael and Dwight, there is a sense of like, oh my God, my old friends are here.
Yeah, yeah.
This is great. Let's all party together.
Yeah.
And then Troy's there, one of his new friends.
Yeah.
Do you have powers?
Troy is a hobbit bit.
Like a wizard? Yeah, he's a real banking wizard. Yeah.
Dwight just decides that's what it is and just never looks back. It's great.
I love
Welcome
when Troy,
to our land.
When Troy makes a reappearance as one of Dwight's friends in the Junior Salesman episode in season 9. I want to go back to what you were talking about technology. And I think it's an important dynamic that kind of gets infused into the show finally in season 4, where, I mean, things are becoming more digital. People are looking to shop online, especially back in 2008. You know, now we see online shopping is still growing, but it's very much a fixture, and it's very, very normal, you know, today. But with back in 2008, it was a little more of a brave new frontier, you know, and Blackberries, you know, were brought out as it was definitely a lot
of Blackberries.
Yeah, like a hallmark of the time, the Blackberry with the full keyboard, with the physical keyboard.
Yeah.
You know, Phyllis is like, how do you push only one of these buttons at once? You
know? Stanley's like, it's too small. Use the phone.
But just in general,
business to business, the old fashioned way, no Blackberries, no websites. I would like to see a website deliver baskets of food to people.
But just in general, the fact that they have to reckon with this change in the way that people shop and the way that people, you know, are consumers, I think, mm-hmm. is really important to bring in. It's not, and they don't really address it that much over the rest of the show. They do a little bit when Saber comes in. They go mm-hmm. to selling printers and tablets and Arrowhead phones. But just in general, the fact that it at least acknowledges this and it shows some resistance from Michael, you know, helps to kind of set up that. Like, they don't have to talk about it again. You know, kind of
right.
Later
it's
on
like
the show.
Let's address this so we can get back to whatever mm-hmm. these people.
And
are doing.
It helps that the website becomes like a failure mm-hmm. by the end because of mm-hmm. Ryan, these defrauding investors and things like that.
It drives Kelly and Daryl together.
Yes,
by ordering the paper, ordering the ream. Would they Single have got ream. Together without Ryan's website? Mm-hmm. Who knows? But yeah, it is kind of a and the food bat the whole food basket thing is like
hysterical.
Is a great scene of Michael kicking against the system of like, I'll do it the yeah. old way, and you even hear the other people being like, you know, the website's real easy to use, that's big for us, so I just buy with them.
Yeah. Gift baskets are the height of luxury and fanciness.
The gourmet items that Scranton has.
More of Michael versus technology. He trusts the GPS machine, which guides him into a lake. Mm-hmm. And he drives his rental car into a lake.
Watching that again and again, like, it becomes sillier every time I see it. Like,
it's so outrageous.
It's so ridiculous. And then Dwight's like, did you get the insurance? He's like, I don't know. And he's like, it's a pretty important question right now. Because it's
Michael,
a rental.
Like, freezes up physically. He yeah. just, like, mm-hmm. is unable to, like... I don't know, his body just like shuts down or something. I feel like that's not the first time that happens. Or it happens again at some point where we see Michael kind of just seize up.
Freezes up.
I don't remember when it is, but anyway.
Hmm.
Yeah. But no, it is, and he comes back and that's sort of his like, you know, I hate technology. It basically, I drove into a lake.
Dwight's calling the tow truck and a cab or something like that. And Michael is just sitting there thinking and then he's just like, hang up.
Yeah, when he goes back to like demand the gift basket back, like what is he actually trying to accomplish? Like the end point is that they get something back that they gave to a client that they're not getting back anyway, right?
It's a win in their minds, but it's amazing because it just has nothing to do with anything.
We are
going
to take a stand, you know.
Where are the turtles?
Yeah, yeah. I ate them, okay?
I feel like they do that again when they go to New York and get the sushi. They're just like these kind of meat like this is just for you guys, but good on you.
Yeah.
You did great.
You got to get out of here. Yeah. you guys got to get out of here.
You called out the clutch move by Dwight grabbing the soy sauce.
Oh, yeah. Michael grabs the tray and Dwight grabs the soy sauce and chopsticks.
Good call. Uh-huh.
A definite difference make. X factor for sushi, no doubt.
Yeah, always. Mm-hmm.
Watching the deleted scenes in Dunder Mifflin Infinity, there's a lot more Ryan. And I think you hear him telling the Vince Vaughn story to multiple people. You do kind of see more of like him clearly faking it. And it seems like they cut that away to kind of slowly reveal that throughout the season. Did you catch that?
Yeah, it's funny to think about that where Ryan is telling everyone the same story. And then that's in Dunder Mifflin Infinity. And then in a launch party when Michael is planning to go to New York, he's like, anyone, if you have any funny anecdotes, I will be listening to them. So please come tell me them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he almost wants that kind of stories to help match up with Ryan, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To kind of go along with Ryan's cool New York stories. He wants anyone's funny stories that they have to offer.
Yeah. There's, and like, I'm thinking about Ryan, like on that video chat being like, and look at that image, like crystal clear, right?
Yeah,
it's like, dude, you're at a party. What are you like, you know, mm-hmm. you just kind of get these tastes of like Ryan doesn't know what he's doing.
We've got our ear to the street.
He's good with buzzwords. He's good with the image.
We've got our ear to the street. Well, we're taking it to the street. Buying paper just became fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Really, another quick technology thing. The Second Life scenes.
Oh, yeah.
I totally forgot about those. Yeah.
We see
Dwight Shelford.
Dwight uncharacteristically just sitting playing video games at his desk. Mm. I assume he's on his break.
In Philly
lunch.
Gym.
Yeah. And who would turn out to become fully realized? Philly, not a sports writer, but still working in sports.
Mm-hmm. Jim Santanko.
He ever learns to play the guitar.
Yeah.
You have a guitar slung on your back. I want to learn more about Philly Jim.
Yeah. Show me how this works.
I do like the idea of Dwight as a video gamer. Like, that comes up every now and then, not at the office per se, but it comes up here in Second Life. It comes up later when he dresses as the character from StarCraft.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, you know, he's like, in my life, I have run a farm. I've commanded vast virtual armies.
Does he's still assistant regional manager in Second Life, or does he make himself regional manager?
I think he does make himself assistant regional manager in Second Life.
Okay, oh, that's funny. It's really funny if both Dwight and Jim's Second Life characters came to fruition eventually. Like Dwight was like made himself manager.
Another dynamic from this season that I wanted to call out is Michael's love life and relationships.
Right.
Because we see it kind of simmering in the early seasons with Jan, but especially once he breaks up with Jan, this sort of delusion that he has where he's like old enough to feel like he's being discriminated against with ageism, mm-hmm. but young enough to feel like he can date girls that are in college. Like
right,
that,
right.
That like, you know, the dynamic where they're at the club and he says, is there a place where we can meet? He's like, it's like a sexy, what does he say? It's like a sexy daycare or something like that, like this club mm-hmm. or something like that. And he says to Ryan, like, is there a place where we can, Ryan says, do you want to go somewhere where we can meet older women? He's, I'd like to go somewhere where we can meet older girls. Like that distinction, you know, still
right,
lives
right.
in his head, you know, it's, and like, yeah.
It's still that kind of like attitude of like, I'm entitled to dating someone hot, but it's,
yes.
but mm-hmm. it's like, well, how hard are you? You know,
another great instance of Dwight, out in like a party public situation, girls just throwing themselves all over him
yeah.
and him just walking out again. Like
he happens. pours out the drink and he says, nice try. Could be poisoned. You know?
Meanwhile, we catch Michael, like telling some girl, like, the plot of Back to the Future.
Right.
Yeah.
A tattoo on my back of Back to the Future. Back because it's on my back. Because in the future, because I'm the kind of guy who likes to think about things long term.
Mm-hmm. And to back to your point, Edwin, of like his love life. I mean, this whole season wraps up with him meeting Holly. I mean, right, everything yeah. crosses, you know, eventually he finishes that fun run.
He truly yeah. doesn't know what he wants or needs. I mean, when he's talking to... He, you know, in the chair model episode, he asks everyone to set him up with a date, and he goes to meet Pam's landlord. And first thing he sees like a young blonde woman, and he says,
totally different outfit.
He says, yeah, yeah. So our lady has dark brown hair, and she's wearing black top and blue jeans. And then the blonde woman has blonde hair and is wearing like a white shirt and a skirt. And he goes, I give her a 10 for looks and a 3 on her ability to describe herself. Right? And she walks right past him and doesn't even talk to him. And then, you know, he's
are you Michael?
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, he tries to ignore when he actually sees the landlady. He actually, I'm trying to Margaret.
Yeah,
he's like trying to ignore her, and the guy's like Michael. And he puts the drink on the counter.
He just looks at him.
Tall hot chocolate with caramel yeah. and a shot of peppermint. And Michael actually says, you know, really nice, endearing things. Like you can see Margaret kind of warming to him, where he says, you know, I just want someone who is nice, who I can talk to, who I can have an experience with. You know, like why is it so hard for people like us, right? And she seems to be coming along. And then he's like, look at what I walked out on. He shows her a picture of Jan. He's like, you can't see down here, but boob job.
That pixelated and then, phone screen.
And like. Then it, you hear Jan's like, Michael? Like, he's yeah, called he her.
Called her.
Talking to her. Like on
more
the
Michael versus technology.
Yeah. But just in general, like, Michael doesn't know what he wants or what he needs. He thinks, you know, you see his inner child come out, you know?
Yeah.
He
puts a chair model on a pedestal.
Even when he's at the club with Ryan, he's like, yeah, Mom, I'm asking a lot of girls to dance.
She calls his mom to the club. Another little great moment in chair model that you pointed out, Edwin, which is Dwight and Michael singing at her grave as it's like Twilight. And then cut to nighttime.
Yeah, they start singing when it's light outside, and then it cuts to them like, singing the second. So yeah, they start singing American Pie.
An hour and a half.
They start singing American Pie, and I love when Michael's like, you know, bye, bye, Mrs. Chair Model Lady. You know, and then he says, we had a lot of kids, long beat, drinking whiskey and rye. So why did you have to go off and die? Yeah. And then they sing the chorus, and they get the chorus wrong. Rhythm and blues. You know? And that's Michael's closure, right? And Dwight's like, you had a woman come into your life, and she meant a lot to you, and now you need to get closure. Right? And I think, too, this is the episode where Andy and Kevin assemble the five families because of the construction. The W.B. Jones construction workers are parking in their spots. And I think, on one hand, you get to see Kevin and Andy kind of stand up for themselves, which is really great, in a moment where Michael really doesn't care. Mm-hmm. He's like, I can but won't, should but shorn't. And they're like, Michael, we need you here. And he goes, what part of short don't you understand?
But I have a company to run. Please let me run the company. Figure it out amongst yourselves.
We also get a little bit of a sneak peek into what actually is going on at the office park, where you get where Kevin explains the five families and like the other companies in the Scranton Business Park, which I think is such a funny little look, which we never get otherwise.
It's been at every like trivia night we've gone to. Mm-hmm. As always, there's always a question about the five families.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to know that. If you're ever doing office trivia, know that.
Any final thoughts about season four? I mean,
I think we didn't talk a lot about Goodbye Toby. I know that we've done a whole episode talking about Goodbye Toby, but if we're going to talk about this season, we should talk about Goodbye Toby.
How Michael, these things round out.
Yeah, it kind of puts a button.
And Did I Stutter, too, is another one.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe let's talk about Did I Stutter really quickly, we do see Stanley stand up to Michael, and Michael has to kind of overcome that, you know, because Stanley has been simmering for so long, his discontent. We see it in Beach Games. We see it in all other moments of the show that where Stanley is kind of waiting out. He's waiting to retire to some extent, you know. And every night he goes home with a glass of red wine and watches his mystery stories. And the last thing he wants is Michael Scott calling him. But
another great callback to In Money when Michael calls Stanley from the lipoephedrine.
Right.
And you just hear Stanley.
Like, Michael? Michael.
I know your voice.
Michael changes his voice.
Yeah.
Did you want to buy some medication?
Did I Stutter? Also, of course, we see Dwight turn on Angela. Dwight turns on Andy. Finally, even after Andy had his back during the launch party when he defeated the machine.
Is this the one where he buys his car?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
The Nissan Xterra.
You can sell it for parts, or you can sell it to me, and I will be used like a wagon. It'll be pulled by a donkey.
Michael's authority being undermined and his respect he wants to get as a boss is threatened by Stanley, and it's something Michael's maybe never really dealt with that overtly, like someone just being like, screw you.
Yeah.
And it kind of creates some interesting situations. He has to deal with Toby. Like, you know, Toby's like, we need to talk about this. You should probably deal with this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Toby, you just don't understand. You're so white.
In the deposition, it's like Michael in a position where he has to sort of make some choices and deal with the fallout of something he doesn't want to deal with.
And it does end with sort of a detente where he gets out. He's like, all right, everybody out. You know, and then he talks to Stanley. He's like, I don't understand why you're being so mean to me. You know, he's like, Michael, I've known you a long time. And the more I get to know you, the less I respect you. He's like, okay, but you can't talk to me like that here. He's
right.
Like, okay, it's fine. You know, so that's because he does the fake firing and Stanley does not handle it well. Like,
no.
Stanley like yells right at him. Mm-hmm. Like, I think
I'm gonna call corporate and tell him every stupid thing you've done up in this office.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that's an important moment for Michael. And then I love at the end when, like, Michael gives this idea, and Phyllis is like, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. Michael goes, all right, everyone out except
everyone
Phyllis.
Out. Yeah.
But just to wrap things up with Goodbye Toby.
Yeah.
I think we do see, I mean, of course, if you want to learn more about Goodbye Toby, go back like a few weeks.
Yeah.
For a Goodbye Toby episode.
But, I don't know how many episodes.
But basically, we get to see Michael and Holly connect and interact for the first time. Holly enters the show for the first time. We get to see Ryan taken away to jail. We get to see, you know, Jim and Pam almost get engaged. Like, Jim is about to propose. We get to see the best party that the party planning committee has ever thrown.
Yeah.
Phyllis is, you know, taking over as the party planning chair. And yeah, there's just so much going on. Andy proposes to Angela. Like, so much happens. You know?
I thought it was interesting, too, watching this entire season and everything's okay with Jim and Pam, even including Branch Wars when she learns that he's going back to talk to Karen. In a deleted scene, we hear them talk. Pam's, like, not worried at all.
You going to go see Karen because you love her?
Yeah.
She's like, I worry a little bit.
Yeah. But I mean, Goodbye Toby kind of reminds us, like, you know, this relationship's still fragile. It's not totally safe, you know? They still need to, they still have some hurdles to get over.
Branch Wars is one of the all-time funny, silly episodes where they go to
the mustaches.
You know, like, I will grind up. I will stab him in the eye with the jumbo chalk.
We will burn you to cut it to the ground.
I will grind up the chalk into a powder and blow it into the guard's eyes.
Yeah,
but to make stink bombs or real bombs, you know. But just to wrap up with Goodbye Toby, you know, what we were talking about, Michael kind of going against these different combating forces or these different opposing forces throughout the season, right? Michael versus Ryan, Michael versus loneliness, whatever, Michael versus nature, whatever it is, right? And Michael is often beaten by these forces, right?
Yeah.
Michael does not come out on top. Even if he does get a little bit better, like with Stanley, maybe you can call it a draw or whatever. But in Goodbye Toby, we get to see Michael with a little bit of hope, a little bit of promise, you know. Obviously, the dynamic of Jan being pregnant complicates things, but it does set up Michael for the sort of development and ascension that he kind of gets to being. Ascension maybe is a little bit of a lofty term, but the fact that he eventually gets happiness and eventually is able to leave the show in a fulfilling, resolved way is set up by the fact that he's beaten down so much in this season, and we get to see him get a little glimmer of hope and Goodbye Toby.
This is kind of the season of Michael, I thought, after watching it.
Yeah, again. For sure. I mean, season five, you could also, I mean, the whole Michael Scott
paper company arc, but throughout season, I mean, Steve Carell's doing a lot of heavy lifting throughout this whole season. And I think that's, I mean, that's one of the reasons it's one of the best.
One of the greats.
My favorite season. Love it.
Time for some trivia.
No, let's go to a conference room.
Let's go to the conference room. Conference room.
Did we have one? Oh, yeah. You wanted to.
Oh, I just was going to say, let's, you know, we're at the very end of our retreat here.
Let me play this. Hang on.
All right. You know what? That's it. Conference room. 5 minutes.
That'd be fun to just do closing thoughts and reflections on our little MSPC retreat here. We're going to, right after this, we're going to pack it up and head back into town. Since we got here, we just turned on the office and we've just kind of been hanging out in our pajamas and watching it. And we got this little studio set up in the back room here.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun. We recorded 4 episodes and some extra material.
Some extra bonus content. Yeah. It's been a nice couple of days for us to kind of focus in. It can be tough with the day-to-day lives trying to figure out time to record once a week, and we want to make sure we're still putting out things regularly. So for us, it's an opportunity to put some content in the bank, really focus in on the show, really get prepared, spend some time watching shows together. I think one thing that I really enjoyed from this weekend was the opportunity to watch The Office with people. So often
We're always prepping on our own.
Right, we prep on our own. Like, it's on in the background while I'm doing something else. Like, it's something that I've seen a million times, but it's fun to watch that together because it almost... You know, you I feel like you notice more when you're watching with other people. Like, it gives you a reason to, like, you're paying attention a little more.
Yeah,
like,
we all had notebooks out.
Yeah, it was a great opportunity for us to kind of, like, really focus back in on the source material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a reminder to anyone listening. Like, it's really fun to do that still. Get a group of people and, like, watch The Office.
Yeah.
Because it's not usually something you put on when, like, people are over necessarily.
Cause, you guys want to watch The Office?
Yeah. You're watching a movie, you're doing something else. Yeah. But... to just sit around and you know the jokes are coming, you know exactly, like, nothing's really a surprise, but people do point out, this was happening a few times, but you're pointing out just small things I hadn't noticed, little things like that. People can help fill in your own enjoyment of the show.
Yeah, well, it was really fun, and we'll have to do it again sometime soon.
I want to also shout out what happened last night. So Anne made us chili while we were recording. We were like making dinner, and I came out, and Anne had prepared this little bit that, like, completely blew my mind at the time.
Gosh.
But she was making chili, like, as in Kevin's chili. That was, we were kind of making office food.
The key is to undercook the onions.
That's right. And she had the whole thing, like, ready, and we came out to sit down. And as I went over to check on it, she grabbed the pot, and the second she grabbed it, I was like, man, what if she dropped it just like Kevin right now? That would be really ironic, which is exactly what happened. And
she's like, oh, it's hot.
She prepared a fake pot with like a red bag in it, so it even looked like there was chili in it, and just immediately dropped the pot in front of me. And I had a moment of pure terror
because
I was also very hungry. It was very well executed. It played right into the show.
Well done,
well
Anne.
Done. And the chili was fine. She'd set it. Yeah. She'd hidden it behind the fridge.
A wonderful prank in true office fashion.
It was.
We did try to get good at the cheese puffs, throwing the
cheese
puffs. Cheese
ball toss. That was another fixture of this weekend.
Maybe another time.
Harder than it looks.
It is.
But when they do that,
we still got to try it. We got to nail that. We got to try that one. So as soon as we get that, it'll be up on Instagram. I'm sure.
We were going to do a little bit more of an office taste test, so maybe we'll revisit that. But, like, some of these foods, mayonnaise and black olives, like, I don't know if you really
not too excited.
That's not the content you come to us for.
Yeah. Time for some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Okay, so for this week's trivia, we're going to do. Something kind of fun and quick that I think will start pretty easy and get progressively harder.
Excellent.
So this is pretty straightforward. This is just middle name trivia. So we'll start easy, we'll get hard.
Yeah. All right.
Michael's middle name is?
Gary.
Correct. Dwight's middle name
Kurt.
Is?
Kurt.
Kelly?
Rajanaganda.
I thought Rajanaganda was a boy's name. Ryan?
That's why I hate it. Ryan Lloyd.
Ryan Lloyd Howard. No, unfortunately, that's
Ryan. James.
Is it like Grant
Bailey? Ryan Bailey Howard. Wow. Kelly's always like Ryan Bailey Howard. All right. What is Aaron's middle name?
Well, Aaron's middle name is Aaron.
Yeah, yeah. Trick question.
Kelly, her first name is Kelly.
That's right.
Yeah. Aaron, that's very pretty. Yeah, as Charles says.
Kelly, Aaron,
Gabe's Hannon. Middle name is?
Susan.
Gabriel Susan Lewis. Well, what's in it for GSL? Andy's middle name?
Andy.
It is Andrew Walter. No, Walter.
Walter was his name from ages, like, from until age seven, when they decided his little brother was more deserving of the name.
Andy. Yes. I can only assume it's a very...
Andrew Baines Bernard.
Yes, Baines. I was going to say, it's got to be a, a white-collar name like that.
Pamela Blank Beasley. Michael says it during the Lover episode, when Helene calls him.
Oh, gosh, that's right.
Pamela...
Marie?
Oh, you're close. Starts with an M. Morgan.
Morgan?
Whoa. Pamela Morgan Beasley.
Wow.
You will respect others, and you will not bring personal issues into the office.
PMB.
I'm your boss, and I may one day be your father. The single most, like, infuriate, like, most upsetting line in the whole show, I think.
Yeah.
Angela.
Noelle.
That's correct. Yeah. D'Angelo.
Jeremetrius,
that's correct.
Jeremetrius?
Mm-hmm. I did. D'Angelo Jeremetrius Vickers, yes.
They really had fun with that name.
And then Cece. Also known as Peepy or Peepa.
It's your baby's name,
Cece, James, Pamela, and Peepy Halpert, as Dwight says at the garden party.
CC,
you said it already, Alex.
PP.
CC PP Halpert.
CC Pamela Halpert.
Is that one Marie?
Yeah, that one's Marie.
Oh, okay. CC Marie Halpert.
All right, and I'll give you a few quick ones that I won't make you guys guess because I can't for the life of me think of when these are mentioned at other times in the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Meredith is Elizabeth. Meredith Elizabeth Palmer.
Okay.
Stanley James Hudson. David Timothy Wallace.
Oh, wow.
Jolene Elaine Bennett. Oscar San Juan Martinez. All of these are taken from Dunderpedia.
Yeah, yeah.
The fan, sure. Yeah. Oscar San Juan Martinez. Jim Duncan Halpert. Jim Duncan, big fundamental.
What?
Big tuna, big fundamental. Jim Duncan.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Phyllis Dorothy Lappin Vance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Toby Wyatt Flenderson.
Whoa, Wyatt is such a better name.
That's a good one. Dang, Wyatt you go Flenderson. By Wyatt.
Yeah.
And then Kevin J. Malone.
Like J-A-Y?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. J-A-Y-E, but... And then Daryl and Creeder have no middle name listed. As a fun tag to this, researching things on Dunderpedia, Holly it was the character that I was looking up, and they didn't have a middle name for Holly, but do you guys know Holly's middle name?
No.
Holly Partridge Flax, a.k.a. a living, breathing angel, as Michael says in the Ultimatum episode.
That's right.
So as a fun little tag to this while I was doing this, I made my first ever edit to Dunderpedia to add in Holly's middle name.
Making our mark.
I don't know about you guys, but so often when I find a little Easter egg or something, like I look it up to see if anyone's found this before, and a lot of times, yes, they've been well discovered and well documented, but this was a one where I'm happy to make my mark. Yeah, this is my legacy right here.
We did it.
Guys, if you have any comments or questions or things that you've caught are not on Dunderpedia, you can always write to us about it on Facebook. We're on Twitter at Michael Scott Pod. We're on Instagram at Michael Scott Podcast Company. Slide into our DMs. Give us a call. We have a phone number. It's 503-694-9314. Leave us a voicemail, question, comment. We play them on the show. We respond to them. It'd be a lot of fun to hear from you. You can always check us out on whatever app you're listening to us on. Please rate and review, share with your friends.
Yeah, every rating review helps us a lot. Thank you as always for listening. Like, subscribe, share, you know, wherever fine podcasts are downloaded, you can find us.
Yeah. And that concludes the MSPC Ryan School Retreat. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bippity poppy, give me the sovereign.
Yes, sir. You took me.
you'll find.